You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Recording in progress.
Recording in progress.
Recording in progress.
Continue.
So, Beth Levels here.
Hey.
Whoa.
Let's just come out. Let's just right out of the gate, Dan. We don't.
Whoa.
She's here. She's here.
Whoa.
Thank you.
Can you believe it?
I don't know how much we can talk about The Devil Wears Prada, but we will, I hope.
Oh, we will. Oh, we definitely
but
will.
But the only thing that matters is that you were in the cast of Bandstand.
Totally. I loved that show.
Wow.
I loved that show, and I love that we're all still connected for the rest of our lives.
We really are. We really are. Yeah. And so I'm so happy that you're here. You got nominated for a couple Tonys. You won one. It's like whatever.
Sitting back there. I've been doing a lot of coaching and masterclass.
So look at it.
I know people kind of want to talk to me, but they really just want me to go get the Tony Award and spin it. So I leave it. So there she is. In case you just need a little, like, oh, there she is, sitting over there.
That's brilliant. There was somebody I heard that left their Tony Award in the bathroom, like on a shelf in the bathroom, so that every time anybody came over to visit, they had to look. They had to look at it because they inevitably had to use the bathroom.
I've heard that too.
Yeah,
it's quite a conversation piece. You know, if you're going to go to the bathroom, it's like, is that it?
Yes.
Spin. It's like opening up someone's medicine cabinet. You just can't help it. But you're going to pick it up and you're going to spin it because you can.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, amazing. So Tony nominee, Tony winner, Bandstand alum.
She's here.
We're so happy you're here. We've wanted to do this for a long time. I'm so grateful that we finally got you, that we snagged you. It sounds like you've been very busy. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Of us who are still in our pajamas.
Well, no, I'm in my pajamas from the waist down.
Right.
No, almost. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I'm totally. It's like, how are we?
She
I know
just
I
showed
said,
us.
Legs out.
How are we ever going to go put pants on again? So we may not have to, but yeah, you know, no, it wasn't busy for a while. Trust me in this, but it's starting to, you know, The Devil Wears Prada has done a couple of mini safe workshops and a couple of this starting feels like it's, we were just talking about this, feels like a little bit of it's starting to come back. And yet it's now it's like, oh, please, everyone be careful so we can fully come back because we've all been out of work for 18 months, essentially.
Let's not do a false start.
Let's get back into this.
Yeah.
I've missed you all in theater and everything.
So an actor is saying his lines, and then out of nowhere, he just starts singing.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Jimmy, don't cry for me.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Taylor Iman Jones is a friend of the podcast. We love her. She was on the show, and
for sure.
She and Dan worked together, and so we got to talk about it a little bit. But you guys posted a picture of the two of you, or somebody posted a picture of the two of you in this.
Somebody did,
lab.
Yeah, it wasn't because you know Mima doesn't post. I hardly know how, so I'm always thrilled to go. Really, where can I? Where? Let me get my Polaroid out and my Kodak.
Well, that's like, it's funny because that's back now. Like now you see people post like the Polaroid is back. So it's just like, just.
It's the picture of the Polaroid.
Right.
Well, then you're welcome. Anyway, I've heard, I'm sorry, my earrings are driving me crazy. I've heard about that. I think it was Kevin Morrow that posted that picture, who did Bandstand with us. So yeah. I'm going to have to go. Yeah. She's going to be my Andy.
Oh my gosh. How's that been going? How did that come about? What's the latest? What can you tell us?
Well, you asked me like three different questions. One was
at
how
a time.
Did it
yep.
come about? So that's one. Would you like me to answer that? Which is a pretty yes. interesting story.
I would. And just like, just please.
This is not,
Dan and I, we suck at most things. Stop and it. Asking questions.
Hey,
I
okay. speak for yourself.
Stop it.
How did it come about for you? One question at a time, Joe.
All right. I was doing a show called The Prom.
Heard of it.
Close too soon, but that's another story.
Sure is.
The director of Devil Wears Prada is this fabulous woman named Anna Shapiro, who is the artistic director mm-hmm. of Steppenwolf. And when she found out, she got this job as the director of Devil Wears Prada. She is mostly a play gal. So this is like her first big musical. And it's a big one. Mm. So she decided to come down to the city and see every Broadway musical that was running.
Wow.
Just to do research and just, I don't know, to be an audience member. And our lyricist, Shana Taub, said, she'd already seen Prom. She said, I really want you to go see The Prom. And Anna said, I don't think so. She said it sounded like High School Musical.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, it's really not. So
it's
I
not.
Think Anna, with an eye roll, went fine and came and saw The Prom. And apparently halfway through it said something like, I found her.
Oh,
I was like,
cool.
Oh, and the next day, the next day, you know, what are days in COVID? We don't remember.
Yep.
Sometime after that, she set up a meeting and just for us to meet. And we ended up talking for almost an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then I went and watched some of the choreography rehearsal. And then they offered me the job and then COVID hit. So everything's kind of as all of us in the arts, it slowed down or stopped. But as of last, we did a 2 week little workshop in New York of Devil Wears Prada safely, where we all, you know, did the drill. You had to be tested, blah, 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 blah. And we sat around and we actually read the script out loud in the room together. Because the script, of course, has done many, many different metamorphoses since it started. The first time we did it was on Zoom during COVID, which was so much fun to read a cold reading on Zoom. Well, you don't know, you know, it takes a while to get used to this Brady Bunch format. And
Right.
You know, as an actor, I was so trying to listen and respond. And he was like, I don't even know who I'm looking at. So,
right.
So we did the 2 week July workshop. And then last week, for 2 weeks, I was only there for one. They did a choreography workshop with our choreographer, James Alsop. And then in November, we have a big boy workshop. And then in the spring, we go to Chicago. This is today. In the spring, we go to Chicago and then hopefully into New York, ASAP. I have to tell you, it's really good. So it's surprised me. You know, sometimes movies don't translate. They're difficult to musicalize.
Yeah.
Or iconic that it's like, why bother? Just let the movie be by itself. But this is different. This is the musical of The Devil Wears Prada and staying very truthful to Lauren Weinberger's novel.
Yeah.
And of course the movie. I mean, the movie was brilliant. So that's the scoop on that.
Oh my gosh. Well,
Of course, Elton John wrote the music.
Who?
Elton John wrote the music with newcomer Shana Taub.
Right.
And I missed the joke. Sorry. You were faster than me.
Yeah, that's
she totally just
thing.
Threw a joke right over my head, and I was like,
Dad,
too fast
Dad.
For me.
You said Elton John, I went,
Elton
I'm really, really hoping this kind of lifts his career, because, you know, he's so close.
You know, he's almost there.
Yeah.
Really
his
almost
music
there.
Is amazing.
Maybe he could quit the job at the diner, and he can, you know, move on to, you know.
Right.
We're so welcoming. Come on.
Let's
come
go.
On over.
Wow. I mean, and this, that was actually, you hit on a question that I had was, I mean, you've developed some really iconic movie titles into musicals.
Sure.
What is this process been like what is that like to sort of elevate a movie and put it on stage? Because I've never done that.
it's yes. Well, no, you didn't. Bandstand wasn't. But as in any original show, giving birth to a new book, even if it's based on a based on a movie, is fascinating. Can be problematic. Can be the best thing ever, right. Depending on your writers and your creatives and the people with the best idea in the room. And we just have a really, really, really smart team. But I think is that the only one I've done that's based on a musical?
Elf and Mamma Mia coming into. I mean, you know, but those obviously you didn't. You know, you came into those, but.
Mamma Mia, the movie was not first. I think the Broadway musical.
Oh yeah, duh. Show this is first. What kind of. Yeah.
So I'm hoping
Joe's really,
really
sharp
today.
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, I love doing original stuff that you can put your own DNA all over. And with a movie, you have sometimes an obligation because the DNA's already been to figure out how to authentically personalize that my Miranda and still respect and love Meryl Streep's Miranda and the Meryl's and the Miranda Priestley that's in the novel.
Yeah. How do you go about differentiating that? It's obviously one of the most iconic roles in the history of the last 20 years of cinema. Have you I know some actors will not watch the movie again, those kinds of things. Right. Are you doing anything to make it your own? Do you have anything that you're going
Dan,
about?
Hey, Dan, thanks a lot for that pressure, Dan. No, you know what? I did.
If anyone can handle it, it's you.
I watched the movie way back when I realized I was going to be doing the part. And then that was enough. And like I was saying, and what was really reinforced this past workshop was this is the musical version of The Devil Wears Prada, which has a different tone, a different energy, a different arc, a different perspective. There's just women behind the table.
Hell yeah.
Director, the choreographer. So the perspective is contemporary.
Definitely.
And Miranda sings.
Yeah.
Which is the name of my autobiography. How to take the most iconic role ever in a movie and try to make it your own without too much.
Exactly. Way to go, Dan.
It feels good. It feels like ours. It feels like something that belongs on Broadway, and we're thankful to the movie and we're thankful to the novel, but this is going to be our musical. It's very exciting.
That's very cool.
Really
I'm so interested to see what Miranda sings about. Because I know you can't tell me that. Like, that's one of the things that I'm so excited to see, I think, the most of. Because when you see that movie, you're like, oh, yeah, like, this sings. Like, you can almost watch. But then it's like, I'm so excited. It's probably one of the titles floating around that I'm the most excited about. And also just that it's you. Like, it's you.
Right.
I'm crazy about you and your work, and just it was like when that casting announcement came out, I remember yes. Come on, there is good in the world.
A good thing happen to good people.
Another worker bee. Another worker bee scores a leading role.
Yeah.
You know, I figured it would go to a TV or a film star. But
yeah.
Right.
It didn't.
Hell yeah. Not
this time.
One for the theater people. Oh my gosh, it's so cool. That's so cool. We have a bunch of stuff we want to ask you, but I want to nerd out a little bit about our time together because one of these let's talk about Bandstand for a second because it's just another one of these like gone too soon. Sort of moments. What do you remember from the process? What do you take away? Like, what do you remember and sort of love most about that show?
There's a lot I remember about it. And let me just say this, even after the prom, there were so many people at the stage door were talking so much about the prom, but they were also talking about how much they love Bandstand, which I thought when you can have the privilege of being in a musical that changes lives that way and represents people that haven't been seen before. It really is special. And so that I do remember that about Bandstand. I remember becoming much more educated about the journey of our vets.
Yeah.
I loved that. This is random that my dressing room was a green room.
Yep.
I had the floor and it's a very small theater, the Jacobs, and there was no place for anyone to hang out And my character wasn't on stage very much. So it gave me so much joy to leave like pretzels and candy and to force people to actually come into the dressing room. And it was like a green room. So I was entertained all the time and got to know, like in scene two and act two, Kevin would come in and we would talk, and then Morgan would come in, and then you guys would come in, but you guys in the band were always on stage. But it was pretty cool. I remember that. I remember feeling like everybody's mother on stage and off, and gave me a lot of joy.
Yeah, and it was like the backstage traffic was just more fun. I mean, that happens so often in shows. Like, I think it gets taken for granted, especially because people, you know, when you're doing a long running show, like what happens backstage gets set as much as what happens on stage. And that is to the point where like the person that you run into during, you know, backstage on a change or something, that's part of your show.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah. I always think that the choreography sometimes is as interesting off stage as it is on stage. And the geometry to have the set pieces and the actors and dancers not get injured at the Jacobs Theater for Bandstand was really fascinating.
Yeah.
I remember stepping over, moving things, but we just learned how to do it. And thank God no one ever got hurt. It's fascinating.
No, totally. And there was like seven, at one point I remember in act one, I think before the sort of ghost, one of the ghost moments, there's like 15 people in your dressing room. It's not a big dressing room. It was a small thing. But before we all went out there, it was like now there's 75 people in this room and we're all eating chips. And, you know, Beth, do you want your dressing room back? Because now you're not allowed.
Nope. You know, another memory about that, which I'm sure you'll agree with me, it was the first time I had worked with Andy Blankenbuehler.
Yeah.
And I think the man's a genius. So just to be in that oxygen and watch him create, watch him give birth to those, that some of the things he did, I was really glad to be in his energy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And one of my favorite things about it, this is one of the great things about having a little podcast, because we get to talk about things the way that we wouldn't, you know, if we were having a beer or something, and we talk about this a lot. But like, I wanted to, the song that you got to sing in Act Two, it was all about how things happen, you know, things happen for a reason. Actually, no, they don't. Things just happen to people. Right. I can't help but think about that song a lot these days.
It kind of resonates differently. It's interesting too. I've been just jumping off that point. I've been starting to do my concerts again, and just the lens of your lyrics have changed. Like that number, things having experienced this 18 months, just things feel different. And just our lenses have focused a little differently. And that song really resonates differently right now. Everything happens. Everything's happens. It's, you know, it's just happens.
Yeah.
It's not divine or anything. It's interesting.
Yeah. No, totally. I've been thinking about it a lot. And is it something, your concerts, we tried to get you on the show a couple weeks back, and there was 54 Below stuff happening. Right. So the concerts are coming back. Are you able to you're doing more of these now?
I am doing more of these. I do my 54 Below again in September, and I go to P-Town in 2 weeks, and I go to Massachusetts, and I go to Napa, and I go to Indianapolis, and I go to St. Louis. That's of today, you know. As of today, things are still safe and working. I feel very, very safe. Everyone seems to be vaccinated and taken care of, and it was so weird the first night at 54 Below, standing there and singing in front of people besides my cat and Adam Heller. Like that muscle had kind of gone dormant. And Zoom, you know, singing on Zoom is like really different.
Yeah.
Because I don't have pants on. And then I had like, you know, like full dress and stuff. It was nice to get my artistic heartbeat jump started again.
Totally. Totally. What's this show about? Is it one show that you're taking around to all these venues?
Kind of. Yeah. It's called It's Not About Me. And of course, it's just all about me. that was the name of the song I had in prom. So it's just kind of storytelling and connecting some of the songs and storytelling. And it's very organic. You know, the set list is pretty the same, but it's a lot of audience interaction and a lot of audience questions and suggestions. And so each show becomes its own kind of singular thing. My musical director and I are thinking, this is big news, are thinking about producing an album. And it's so interesting to sit in the room and ask people who are there to hear you sing what they would like to hear you sing. It's fascinating. And sometimes we know it and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we fake it and sometimes we actually sing it out of the blue.
Oh my God.
So it's really fun.
That's
awesome.
It's
very organic and silly sometimes. Or they'll go, can you sing Memories? It'll be like, no. Anyway, so.
Oh my gosh.
I can't.
No. I can't. Or it's like, no, I'd bleed and leave body organs on the floor.
Oh my God. That sounds so fun. So it's like set, but it's also sort of just like a moving like karaoke show, but also like, you know, through your life and career.
Ish. Yeah. Yep.
It's like the cabaret of a different era. You know, that was like a different, there was a time when that was a thing that people did. And you're one of the few people, I'm sure, in the industry who would be comfortable doing something like that. I would love to see that.
That or I'm an idiot. One or the other.
No.
It's entertaining.
You're a genius.
It's just new. So like I said, each show is just a little different. And the, you know,
right.
I just try to keep it open and fun. And then, it sing some sad songs at the end.
right. The section of ballads. Mm-hmm. Keep people laughing.
Now,
answer questions about Bandstand and prom and stuff like that, because people want to know.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So we've got your list of things here, and my introduction to you, list of things, meaning list of all of the shows you've done, which is a lot of them, all the way back to 1985. Is that's your first? Was 42nd mm-hmm. Street?
I did the first national tour of that for 8 months, and then the role opened up in New York, and that was my Broadway debut. It was 85, that's right, because I was out on 1984. I was just 13.
And We have the same agent, and he told me in the backseat of a cab on the way to something we were going to that you were one of his first clients in the business, and that he's loved to watch your success all the way through because he's tracked you. I'm just curious, like, does the industry feel different now? This is kind of a rhetorical question because the answer is probably yes, but how different is it now than it was when you started out?
Well,
how have you navigated that?
Let me go back to Mark for a second. Mark was, and this is for all you
Mark Ridanti,
PRS Gage, just for all of you young actors out there. I have been with, let's put it this way, Mark Ridanti is the man I have been with in a relationship longer than any other person in my life. And he saw me do this off-Broadway thing, which I thought he saw. Anyway, we had an argument during 54 Below, because it's like, no, he saw me when I was doing this off-Broadway thing. It's like, no, I saw you at ELT, which was Equity Library Theater. It's like, really? Mm. My memories. But he was the assistant at a very small agency. And there was some connection we had. So I signed with him at that agency. And then he got this other job at Bauman Hiller. And then it became something else. And now it's BRS, which is Bauman, Ridanti, and Shaw. So he now owns the agency. So I've been with him like 35 years. So my perspective of that has not changed for me at all, because I've been with this man and this company, BRS, and now BRS Gage for a long time. The industry, I'm sure, has changed ginormously I remember when I didn't have an agent, running out every Thursday morning because there was no intraweb, and I would go to the kiosk on 45th and 8th in front of Smiler's, and I would buy it backstage. And I decided I should learn how to drink coffee because I was in New York, and I would take a copy from Smiler's and I would go through that page like biblically and circle everything that I was going to audition for that week. And I would just go. I auditioned for puppet theater. I auditioned to be like a mime. And it was so joyous because I was in a place where the possibilities were endless. And I just needed to leap and just see what happened. But I'm sure the business is so different now. It's, you know, Broadway, it's show business. And I remember maybe it's more commercial now than it used to be. It needs to be more profitable now than it used to be. I don't know, like, what's it like auditioning now? Do you still, like, I remember getting up at 6 o'clock and waiting in line outside of Equity for my chance to sing 16 bars.
Yeah.
I mean, I did that in 2013 and some of 2014. And when I first graduated, yeah, just when casting directors didn't know who I was, right, and I wanted to get seen for things. And I know that people still do that.
I wonder what that's going to be like now in this sort of, you know, as COVID, we're still in the middle of it. But like somebody asked me the other day, like, what is the open call situation going to be like? That's one of the great sort of like democratic equalizers of our business, where like you can wait in line. If you get up at 5 a.m. and go wait outside of the Equity building, you can be seen. You can audition for Phantom. Yeah. Like, go for it. Like, you know, go sing your song. Right.
Yeah,
like,
I think that's kind of a TBD, don't you?
Yeah. Because it's great. It's one of those things that, like, you know, you can't do on TV and film. Like, you can't get seen for everything. Right. But, like, on stage, like, you can get seen. So I hope it doesn't go away. Maybe it changes, but, you know.
This is one of the biggest changes in the industry right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything can be done via your computer or your phone or your laptop. Back in the old days, we had to put on the pantyhose and walk to the men's coffee and audition.
Now you don't have to put any pants on at all, and you walk into your office, lay it down.
Oh my gosh! So right before then, before you're standing on 45th and 8th, getting backstage. What? Because you didn't grow up in New York.
No.
What pulled you here? Was it always musicals, always musical comedy, Broadway? Like, what was that journey like?
You know, I'm so untraditional in my trajectory. Not that there's any normal trajectory for anyone, but a lot of people started a lot younger. I didn't know what musical comedies were until my senior year in high school. And my best friend asked me to audition for the spring musical, which was Brigadoon. I was like, why not? And I just, you know, back then, the musicals in big high schools, you rehearsed like in a band room for months, and then you actually did like 3 shows.
Yeah.
But I remember that my first day in that band room thinking, where have these people been all of my life? And how can I stay here? But in North Carolina, my parents were, you know, get a normal job, have kids, theater. Right. So I went and I have a degree in social work counseling. From a small college. Yeah, which is coming really, you know, social work counseling is kind of listening and responding, which what is what acting is all about. I had a minor in theater, but during that time I had a teacher who became my mentor who just pushed and pushed and I did everything I could get my hands on at North Carolina State, at my school Meredith, at the community theater. Community theater changed my life. At a black box theater here, just anything I could do, just because I was so ill-informed about myself as an artist or even who I was gonna, what am I doing? But there was such a passion. It started out as a huge curiosity, but then it transferred to just a passion. And I just had to figure out in the 80s how I was gonna deal with that. So I was too chicken to move to New York afterwards because I'd been there once. I'm like, there is no way. So I went and got an MFA, a Master of Fine Arts in Acting and Directing from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And in that 2 years, I was one ginormous sponge. And I just don't think I've ever been happier. You know, when you know something, when you know you're in the right swimming pool, it's like, oh my God, This is my team. This is who I am supposed to become. I don't know why. I don't know how. There's none of it in my family. I didn't see a single musical growing up. It's like, where did that come from? I still to this day don't know. I really don't. And then I did an internship for 8 months where I answered the phone at the box office, third sword carrier from the left. I could do a cartwheel. So I was in a musical, but at the end of it, they gave me my equity card.
Nice.
So I had my little equity card and I was on a bus from, believe it or not, Allentown, Pennsylvania.
No. Allentown.
Oh my God.
I'm offering you, what's the line?
I just offered you the opportunity of a lifetime and you can say Allentown.
Yeah.
What was that word you just said? Allentown. I'm offering you a chance to star in the biggest musical Broadway scene in 20 years and you say Allentown.
That's right.
Way to go. Oh my God.
That's a quote from 42nd Street.
42nd Street. Dan just pulled it out of his hat because guess what? He's a guy who likes
musicals. A guy who likes the musicals.
That's so funny. So it's like you walk into the band room and you're in the happy place. You get your MFA, you're in the happy place. I feel like we're all just sort of chasing that feeling, like walking back into rooms where you feel like you're in the right swimming pool.
Yeah. And it's not, doesn't happen that way all the time. But once you know this sounds so trite. Once I knew my purpose, I knew this is what I was supposed to do. I knew it wasn't going to be all like, oh, happy, happy all the time. It's not, it's very up and down. It's very mercurial and it's success rates and when you work and when you don't work, but nonetheless, she persisted.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my gosh. That's so cool. Alan, I can't believe he was from Allentown.
I know, Allentown.
That's so funny. Just like this. Oh my God. Anyway. So I'd love to we'd love to do a deep dive on one of the projects. Just any one of the, I would love to hear your, I mean, I guess the biggest one is probably Prom, but if there's a project that you've done,
Drowsy Chaperone.
I mean, we'd love to talk about just something that, you know, from beginning to end sort of that sticks out to you. Like, you know, if there was one of those shows, one of those projects that just like really.
All of them do. But, you know, the original ones really stick out. So choose one. Drowsy or Prom. What do you think?
Dan, coin flip.
Prom, I guess.
I'm going to do Drowsy. Okay. Anyway, thanks for your contribution. I don't care. because Prom was quote unquote easier because I didn't have to audition for it. It was written.
Right.
But if I was counting today back, we have been, the four of us, me, Angie Brooks, and Chris have been associated with Prom for 9 years.
Wow.
So, you know, our DNA is all over that puppy. But Drowsy started out as an audition. Mark got me the audition and they actually sent me the script before I had to audition because it's like, what's the name of it? The what? So I read it and I remember reading it and laughing out loud, which is hard when you're concentrating on an audition, but it was so flippin' funny. But the role I was auditioning for, Beatrice Stockwell, wasn't really what I like to call on the page. Whoever they cast was going to have the responsibility of giving birth to something that no one really understood yet. No pressure.
Sure. Totally.
So there was no song yet to learn. So I went in and sang 100 Easy Ways to Lose a Man. Probably not the best choice, but I didn't know who she was. Right. And neither did the creatives. And I didn't know Bob Martin and all the Canadians. I didn't know them. I knew Casey Nicholaw because he was in the ensemble of Crazy for You with Me.
See, this is the stuff that's crazy about him. There's many people who are like, oh yeah, Casey Nicholaw, even Andy Blankenbuehler, who was like, you know, in the ensemble of, you know,
Saturday Night Fever. Learn, and you're like, that's how they learn their stuff,
exactly.
Man.
You're like, yeah, no, I was in that's crazy. So you were in the ensemble with...
With Casey. Insane. And Rob Ashford was one of the replacements in the ensemble.
Oh my God.
Wow.
There you go.
That's crazy.
So there you go. Now I totally forgot where I was.
Sorry.
No, a bunch of people in the room. I didn't know. I sang my song, read the sides. The sides weren't funny. I didn't make them funny. I tried, but again, like, who is she? I had no idea. You're just kind of throwing things up against the wall. And it's like, is this going to stick? So I had a call back. I went back, did the same thing. I still don't think I was special enough. And about 2 weeks later, and this really never happens, Casey was kind enough to actually call me because we knew each other. And he said, "Ah, thank you so much for coming in. You're not going to get the role." And I went, "I know, no, I don't think I'm right for the role. I don't think I'm the person that should give birth to it." And he was like, "Yeah." It's like, "Maybe you need someone older." It's like, "Yeah." Because this was, you know, 17 years ago. So from what I hear, they went to Los Angeles, the whole creative team, and auditioned Eartha Kitt. Louise, played Ginger on Gilligan's Island? Help me, Tina Louise.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is where I'm going to start the generation. Do you remember? Do you know who Joan Van Ark is? Knott's Landing. Google. Anyway, so that kind of ilk of fabulous TV divas.
Totally.
Apparently, I don't know what happened. Nothing worked out. They came back and kept auditioning. They offered the role to someone. The person, I think from what I understand, thought the role wasn't big enough.
So I think at that point, it probably wasn't.
It wasn't.
Yeah, there wasn't.
No, it wasn't really.
Right.
So I think they offered it to someone else and that didn't work out. And finally, I literally think Casey went, just give it to Beth. Just, we have to go. And Mark calls me and he says, "Oh, hi, I have a job offer for you." And we love that. It was really a slow time before Drowsy too. I'm like, "Yes, I'll take it. I don't care what it is." And a job offer means you don't have to audition. It's like, "I don't care. Where am I going? Utah? Let's go."
Right.
And he said, "You've been offered Beatrice Stockwell in The Drowsy Chaperone." And I went, "Mark, no, I haven't." I said, "You need to call them back. I think you made a mistake." So I hung up the phone and he calls me back and he said, "Yeah, and you leave in 3 weeks for a 3-month out of town tryout at the Amundsen Theater in Los Angeles."
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good out of town. We love that.
So pack my bag. I was like, "Children, Mama's going to LA." And I found who she was when I was there. So to win the Tony Award after knowing all that made it even more satisfying that what I gave to it and what the creatives, what we all discovered in giving birth to this fabulous character was pretty cool.
That's so cool.
That's unbelievable. You love
that. I love that.
You hinted at something though, in the beginning of that story where you said it was a hard time. It was a dry spell before you started. I think it's interesting when you look at somebody like a Beth Level, not to speak about you in the third person, but you've been in like almost a dozen Broadway shows. It may be a dozen.
It's 13, probably, and 14. Thanks for doing your homework, Dan.
Anyway,
love that.
I'm kidding.
And you have these bouts where you go long periods of time between Broadway shows. And I think that it's hard to comprehend that. It's hard for me to comprehend that time. What do you do in between? How do you make sense of that? How did you go 5 years between jobs and not give up?
There was always something I was doing, but it wasn't necessarily Broadway. And I would love to, I should do this just out of curiosity, see how long it was from Crazy for You to Civil War to Drowsy.
Crazy for You was 92. Okay. Showboat was 94.
Oh, look at you. What about Civil War?
99.
Never mind. And
Drowsy is 2006.
There was something before Drowsy. What was right before Drowsy?
42nd Street.
I have here 42nd Street at the Ford
Center.
Oh,
the revival.
Yeah.
The revival. Well, that's one of the ways that I was a standby. I remember going to audition and they said, you know, because I knew the show really, really well. And they went, "Well, you're too young for this and you're too old for that. Would you want to stand by?" And it's like, absolutely. So it's the first time I ever stood by on the Broadway. And then Christine Ebersole got another show and they offered me Dorothy Brock. And I did it for about a year and a half. Mm. And then after that came something else. And then between that and that and that, that's when it was not, it was kind of dry. So I was just traveling everywhere, which was a great way to be an actor, you know, learning. I met all sorts of new people. I went to Oklahoma. I went to the old Globe. It's like, let's just work, just see what happens.
Right.
There can be dry spells. So hopefully you've saved up a couple of shekels.
Yeah.
And then you just, that's part of the gig. And I'm not going to I'm not going to give up. Like again. And again, she persisted.
100%.
I remember asking one of the one of the really interesting things about being in the original company of 42nd Street, not the original cast, was the dames that had been around the block. And I would sit and just listen to B.B. Osterwald, who was, you know, Carol Channing's understudy. And wow, all these fabulous women would come in. And one of the questions we would inevitably ask them was, what's the secret? And they would always say persistence.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. Don't give up. Don't give up until it no longer brings you joy.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's the key. And a lot of people, we've heard that a lot. And this podcast ends up just being like church for Dan and I, therapy, you know, to like actor
Absolutely.
Therapy in this way,
and
to be like,
us.
To just be like, yeah, just hang in there.
Hang in there. You know, if I quit and drowsy hadn't, I mean, after drowsy happened, my people were like, oh, is this your first show? And it's like, people, I've been doing this for, come on, like 15, 17 years or something.
I always love that when it says in like casting breakdown, you know, or headlines or whatever, it's like newcomer such and so. You know, even right. like Dan, like no, not to drag you earlier, you said newcomer Shayna Taub, but it's like Shayna Taub's been writing musicals for like, you know, 15 years.
Time.
You know, and, yeah. and now she's right. now she's a household name because of, you know, because of Suffs and because of this, but it's like because of Prada, but it's right. like, yo, people are putting yeah. in the work, and then you win a Tony Award and you're newcomer Beth Level, Tony Award winner for Drowsy Chaperone. You're like, no man.
No man. It's
this
been
is, this is number six. Yeah. We've been around.
Yeah. Thanks
for I wanna go back to that process. So you're in the rehearsal room for Drowsy, and I got to see this, like you alluded to it, that like, you know, June Adams in Bandstand was not around a lot, and she should have been. I mean, we could have written a whole musical about her, and I, you know, it could have been, but like I got to see that a little bit when you would, it just felt like you would throw things at the wall in the best way. They would, you'd be given a scene, and you'd just be like, I'm gonna walk out here with the deviled eggs, and I'm gonna stand here for as long as I possibly can, and everybody's going to erupt in laughter. And if that works, I'm going to do it. And if it doesn't, I'm not. And it was like this, you had this air of just like, I'm going to try anything. And I wonder if that is that fearlessness, is that just your, is it in your DNA? Like, what is that? And especially for Drowsy, which is a, you know, has a lot of elements of farce and, you know,
right.
you know, very, very comedic.
Part of it is complete fearlessness when I feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm in a room with a creative team who gives me permission and encourages me to come in and throw everything up against the wall, because they are really waiting to see, that's probably why I'm cast, because I get a lot of roles that no one knows what the heck they are. It's like, well, let Beth fumble around and vomit.
She'll
off.
Find it.
She'll come up with something.
She'll figure it out.
Hopefully. But with Andy, I feel safe doing that. With Casey, I feel safe doing that. With Devil Wears Prada, I feel so safe doing that. I also trust the people behind the table to go, don't do that again. Like, great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we always say, I'd rather you give too much than not enough. And
yeah,
then people
right.
cut back as opposed to trying to make you give more.
Right.
One of the things
right.
about Drowsy, too, was we spent from 10 to 12 every day in Los Angeles doing homework, watching films, so we could all understand the tone of the piece. We could all figure out the tone of the piece. So that really helped. And I've told this story a thousand times. Sorry if y'all have heard it before. But one of the aha moments for Beatrice was when we were doing a game called Hot Seat. We were doing like improvs, theater games. I was like, oh God, no, not theater games. But it was so helpful. And we would come out and we had to write a bio, which mine was just complete bullshit. Sorry, because I didn't really understand the person. So I'm like, kind of, maybe her parents were famous in the British theaters. And I would just kind of make up stuff until something felt right, which was never until those games. And then I came out the last week of Hot Seat. You know, Hot Seat's when you sit there and the cast is on the other side of the table with the creatives and they throw questions at you and you're in the hot seat and you have to answer as your character. Now, if you don't know who your character is, it's kind of interesting. And it's a great way to kind of
makes you sweat.
But it also sometimes solidifies something. Like this right. day when, for the first time ever, Casey went, ladies and gentlemen, Dame Beatrice Stockwell. And he'd never said Dame before. So that makes you, you know, as I'm walking to the chair, I'm going, I'm a dame. The cast and the creative stood up like I was Madonna. I was like, bravo. And I remember bowing and I went all the way down to the floor. And I went, there she is. Nice. It was like, there she is. I know where to start. We all knew where to start. This narcissistic, drowsy, fabulous, complicated, selfish, endearing character. It's like, and let's go. And then I could write the bio.
Oh my God.
Another thing too, Joe, you're talking about the deviled eggs and stuff. Once you've created that process in the rehearsal room, the next step is your scene partner, which is the audience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they completely inform the paprika.
So, right. Exactly. Completely.
It's like, this is funny. Well, yay.
Yeah, right. Right.
You never know. You never know until that scene partner gets there what works and what doesn't work.
That's so true. Oh my gosh. I love that.
And you can never know unless you try. And that, I think, is that's the best lesson.
Yes.
Because it's not like you were standing in the wings being like, what bit am I going to try today? It was like, somebody said something as you were walking, and then your natural impulse was to do something, and that was the answer.
That was,
and that's the hardest thing to do, but it's the best.
I think it's authentic. It's truthful.
Yeah.
Particularly if it elicits the response that the director and you and the people that wrote the book and music want.
Yeah.
Or even if it doesn't, sometimes it's like, oh, well, let's keep that.
Right, right.
100%.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What has been the greatest challenge of your career?
Really? That's so difficult. I think it comes in different phases depending on how old I have been. When I moved to New York, it was trying to accept my own singularity as I'm enough and living with that as opposed to feeling like you need to be more this or more that, you know, trying to find your authentic voice.
Yeah.
Which we will continue to do our entire career. And then when you're not working, how you keep your persistence.
Yeah.
Positive. And just that whole process. Then when you do win a Tony Award, it's like, how did I deserve this? Each job that's next is like, was that a fluke? We still do the imposter questions. Don't you guys do that? It's
endlessly,
like somebody's going to find out. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't do it as well as she does. It's like that voice sometimes learning how to listen to it and then not give it any power and just do your work.
Totally.
Yeah. So there's always something, but yet, you know, I keep coming back to it. So obviously my passion for this, my persistence for this work is more important than those negative things floating around, but it's just a normal part of the process. And sometimes it's challenging, particularly when you're not getting work. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to work again. And lo and behold, your persistence proves you wrong. Go get your backstage and circle the puppet theater auditions. Start there.
It's so good. It must be so hard to trust because you know, you're such a unique and animated person, and all of all of that comes into your work, and it's why you're so brilliant on stage. But if you start to doubt your own essence, how can you allow that? Like, how can you let that shine? So, I can only imagine.
It's interesting. It's going to be interesting with, you know, Anna, the director, doesn't really know me. You know, she doesn't know that side of me except what she saw from prom. And to be playing Miranda, I am the quietest person in the room.
Right.
And chaos is all around me. So I'm really looking forward to finding my authenticity and singularity and essence and how that's going to work there. It's very exciting.
Oh, that's so cool.
Take all that chaos and put it inside.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait.
Is there a book or a resource that you point to as something that's been invaluable for you in your life or your career?
Oh, I wish I had a really great answer to that and a really smart answer. But I just learn in each show I'm in. I learn from the director. I learn from the musical director. I learn from my fellow actors. You know, I've taken acting classes and stuff, and I don't have one resource.
Sure.
Just learn when I'm in the rehearsal room. And then when I'm on stage with my scene partner, the audience, they're kind of my best teacher.
Oh, that's good. Ooh, yeah.
Well, I got like a whole shelf of self-help books, but none of them teaches me what I learned from the audience and you guys, my peers.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That preview process, that like,
oh, that's fascinating.
Throwing it out there and saying, what do y'all think?
Am I good?
You know,
I remember, and Casey loves to tell this story, the first preview of Drowsy Chaperone. Nobody knew what it was. Again, I only do musicals with problematic titles, like Bandstand. Is that Dick Clark? Remember how often we got that? The Prom. Yeah. Is that High School Musical? And the Drowsy Chaperone, which was ended up the droopy, you know, no one knew what it was. So people, I think, couldn't wait to sit in the audience and just judge. And after the first preview, Casey said the curtain came down and it was like this. Holy shit. But people were like, which was palpable to us, was just palatable. We could feel it. We could taste it. It's like, oh my gosh. And you know, when you have someone as smart as Casey is, just knew in that 4-week preview how to even shine it up more, clean it up more, make the arc of the story even more focused. So by the time we got to opening night, we knew we had just a great story to share.
Oh, that's so cool. What's your favorite or sort of most influential musical in your life, in your career? Could be something you've done, but or something that just really inspired you as you were coming up.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't see anything, but a vivid, vivid, vivid memory for me. I think I was in sixth grade, and because there was no theater around in North Carolina when no theater that my parents took me to, we went to see movies occasionally, and one that imprinted so deeply on me, we went to see Robert Preston in The Music Man. Mm. And you remember that first time feeling that you've kind of left your body and you're in the screen or on the stage. And I remember at that moment thinking, I want to be in that band so bad. I want to go like this and have my costume change. Seeing that magic, you know, I didn't know what to do with that at the time. It was another 6 years or longer, 12 years until I figured out, oh, but it was still there. Mm. That experience in that magic of the musical and people singing to each other. Totally. And then you come to New York and, you know, I remember leaving my body in Dreamgirls, just going, how did they do that?
Mm-hmm.
Chorus line, thinking, what's happening up there? I was so moved by these storytellers and their, you know, I didn't grow up as a dancer and their stories that they shared so brilliantly. Oh, it just changed my life.
Mm. That's
still
so,
does.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember, this is a question that I've always wanted to ask you this, and this is not a great question, but since you didn't come up knowing and you know, with musical theater, when did you know you were funny? Do you remember?
Well, that's different. And, you know, I do remember in fifth grade getting a lot of making up a story in my class and the teacher going, I had to go out in the hall. And I learned I could make people laugh pretty much at an early age. But I never associated that with like being on stage. My mother would just, well, that's just the way she is. Just ignore her.
North Carolina.
Yeah. So, I did this in sixth grade. We did a little historical presentation. And I remember I had to put an egg, fake egg, down someone's shirt, and it got a huge laugh. That I can still talk about it now, and I don't remember anything about it, but I just remember that laugh going, what's that feeling?
Yeah, right.
What's happening? I love it. And it was a way, you know, it was a way to get attention. Hi, Dr. Freud.
Yeah, right.
Can you see me now?
Oh my gosh. That's like, and that's what I, you know, back to those moments, those are always so fascinating to me. Like when, you know, you're a little kid and you're like, oh, this, and then when that matches up with your job,
what?
You know, what even is that? So did that happen in this community theater? Was it more like in college when the funny, when like your sort of manic six-year-old self matches up with work?
Yes, somewhere in college and community theater. It was like, oh my gosh, this, and I, you know, I was rewarded for it. I won the best supporting actress at the community theater.
Absolutely. Where's that trophy on your shelf?
It's the size of a log, so I'm not sure. Journey, but it's just, you know, things just started building, and I realized how much I had to learn. But then I did Dolly to get my MFA. It was like my thesis, and then there was kind of no turning back after that. It's like just go, leap, just go, see what happens. It's terrifying as it is.
That's so cool. That's so cool. And we're getting to the end. We've taken up the massive chunk of your afternoon, and we love you for
it. I'm so busy today.
Well, listen, we don't know.
Yeah. No. Like you and then vacuum.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So we always ask people, the unreachable star question is what I call it, which is kind of like, you know, you've accomplished so much in your life and in your career. What are you pointed towards now? What would you like to accomplish? Is there anything that's on the horizon that you'd really love to do?
Yeah. You know, I can't not say Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada. I can't, if you had told me 3 years ago that this was going to be my journey, I'd be like, what are you kidding? So that to me is hopefully a reachable, obtainable star and journey. And I'm forward in a, I'm as terrified as I am joyous of figuring out who this person is and then sharing her with my scene partners.
I love that. I love that. And that's like right around the corner. I mean, that's like, right, you know, fingers crossed.
Thank you. Light your candles.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. Put your mask on, get your shots.
And then
we'll see you in Chicago. So we talked about the show. We talk about the 54 Below shows. Your concerts are coming to a theater to a city near you. So check out. Is there a place to find that? Is there like BethLevel.com?
There's BethLevel.net. I have Sean,
my
fabulous friend, did a whole website for me because I'm techno. I'm a Luddite when it comes to any of this, and so I go to my website to figure out what I'm doing. It's like, when am I going? It's like, oh, BethLevel.net. Oh, I gotta go. So yes, that's it. BethLevel.net. She did a great job. It's fabulous.
Perfect. Well, we love you. Thank you for spending the time.
After you get nominated for your Tony for Miranda Priestly, you'll be back. It's gonna be great.
Yeah. Knock wood. Yes. Do the whole thing. And I guess one of the things, like, just to finish up that we do on this show that we don't get to do when in real life is just, you know, say what our guests mean to us, and you mean so much to me, and our time together on that show was too short but amazing, and I learned so much from you, and I'm just so grateful for your leadership and for your light, and just thank you from the bottom of my heart, and thank you for talking to us today, and
so lovely. That's so gracious.
We'll see you in Chicago.
Yes, please. Y'all be kind.
That
Thank you for listening to Guys Who Like Musicals. We are now part of the Broadway Podcast Network.
Woo!
We are hosted by Dan Tracy.
That's you.
And Joe Carroll.
That's me.
We're produced by Ryan Kincaid, and Matthew Mucha is the social content manager.
You can find us on Instagram at Guys Who Like Musicals, on Twitter at Musical Guys, or the old-fashioned way at www.guyswholikemusicals.com.
If you'd like a chance to be featured on the Ask the Guys segment of our show, please call 203-900-7990 and leave a message with your question. As always, thanks for listening.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.